Hi there, everyone, and welcome to our first Friday posted sermon of this season because of coronavirus, of us doing so much of our worship live streamed, conference calls, remote, all of those different expressions. We're thankful for those technologies and how God is in God's Spirit still binding us together as a community and helping us worship and serve together. But we know that this is still a little bit hard. So one of the things that we're trying, and especially promoting a sense of community, connectivity, and interactivity, is now doing Sunday morning worship a little bit different. We are still going to be live streaming for most of our worship expressions Sunday mornings at 10:30. But we're going to try this thing where I post the sermon early on Fridays so that people can watch it Friday, Saturday, however, over the weekend. And then instead, on Sundays, we're going to focus on ways that we can be interactive around the sermon and the other worship ideas that we're missing because we're not able to be together and, you know, poke each other and chat and whisper during the sermon or talk afterwards at coffee hour and things like that. So hopefully you'll see this, you'll have some questions that you might want to ask and say, hey, what do other people think about this, or what would Rob say about this question that comes to mind because of the sermon, or you'd want to share some stories and from your own life that you relate to what you hear in the sermon. Or today we're going to be looking at some movies, and so you can maybe share a favorite movie that helps you think about God the same way I'll try to connect a movie to our faith today as part of our Finding Faith Off the Beaten Path series. I'll talk a little bit more again about ways that you can interact with this leading up to Sunday at the end of the sermon, but we're going to go ahead and jump in and continue to find all of those different ways that we can connect with God even outside of our traditional churchy formats or settings, or things that have the most obvious Christian label. And one of the things that comes to mind for me, especially about that idea of finding faith off the beaten path, is some of the things that happen when we look at the world around us and culture and media in particular. Many of you know that I have a background in film production and in media theory. It's one of the ways that I love interacting with the world the most and seeing how people create beautiful artistic expressions, create meaning for other people to watch and listen to and to interact with, and that we can even do that ourselves as a way of expressing our God-given creativity. However, I think many of us have probably had experiences like I did growing up, where that can be a little bit fraught. When we're people of faith, we want to take seriously the influences that things have on us and what's good, what might be negative, wanting to follow God. And for a lot of people, when it comes to media, that's one of the biggest cases where things can butt up against each other. I don't know how many of you have memories of, with your own parents or with you being parents and with your kids, having some of those battles of how are we going to decide the best way to interact with the world around us, and in particular, interact with media, with film, with TV, with music, all of those different types of things. I remember having some of those battles with my parents wanting to consume certain things and interact with certain things that they were a little bit questionable about. Again, you may relate to this too. Some things that we used to do in my household, I remember, is there was a magazine called Breakaway that was like a Christian magazine that would write reviews of things that got really popular as kind of a guide to kids and parents about, like, well, from a Christian perspective, at least our Christian perspective, we think this is the thing that's positive, this is the thing that's negative or maybe watch out for, maybe this is something to avoid, maybe this is something to talk about as a family, maybe it's something that's good to watch no matter what, whatever it might be. And there were lots of things that sprung up about people, I think, trying to struggle with this question as people of faith in particular. Not only were there magazines like that, but I remember there was a whole cottage industry within the Christian publishing industrial complex of books that were about finding God in Star Wars, finding God in The Simpsons, finding God in U2, all of those different types of things that were out there in popular media, and some people thought were great, some people thought were really bad and problematic, some people weren't sure what to think about. And so lots of people kind of stepped in to try to give at least their guidance in thinking about these questions, especially for how we want to follow God and express our faith. And you may also remember and even have some of your favorites of alternative Christian media, where there was the secular stuff that maybe the battle lines just weren't worth fighting over anymore, and so let's create our own bands and our own Christian music. Let's create even our own Christian movies, especially if one starred Kirk Cameron. That probably meant it was a Christian movie that was different and had a certain type of message. And so then we didn't have to worry about it at all. right? So this is something that's probably been a part of a lot of us growing up, having family interactions, learning what it means to be a follower of God and value things that are important. And we may have all come to different conclusions about that, but hopefully that's something you can relate to. And I think that in particular, even if you don't remember those exact conversations, you can relate to the feeling underneath it, because right now we've got an infection around us all the time, on our minds, that we're on the lookout for, trying to be safe about, coronavirus. And really, I think that infection analogy is a big part of how we often approach these questions of interacting with media, or really interacting with anything that's off the beaten path of our faith. And if we're willing to look for our faith off the beaten path, then those questions come up. And this infection analogy is often what shapes our perception of what should be good, what should be bad, and how we should address it. Because if you see something as being an infection, right, first you want to protect yourself from it at all costs. You got to put up lots of good barriers and maybe even just do something completely different where you won't interact with the potential infection at all. And then if the infection is around, you have to do something to completely eradicate it, wipe it out, get rid of it. And we've applied that a lot of times to sin, to people who are different than us, to what it means to try to do the right thing and avoid what we think might be the wrong thing in our Christian faith. But I think that while that can sometimes be a helpful analogy, there are also things about it that could actually be worth rethinking a little bit. And so as I'm thinking about finding faith off the beaten path, this analogy of infection in particular that we can all relate to right now, whether we've had lots of battles about media or not, one of my favorite movies comes to mind. And that movie is from, I think, about 7 years ago, 2012, 2013, and it was called Warm Bodies. And it might seem at first like a traditional zombie movie that was really popular back then, right? You've got your monsters, your kind of apparently, essentially humanity lost villains and things that people had to watch out for. They just clomp around, they can't talk, they don't seem to be able to feel. But we do meet one, his name's R, there in the red sweatshirt, who desires to have more of a connection with other people. And so he starts trying it with other zombies, but that's not really popular. They just kind of glower at each other, maybe they grunt. There's still that sense of their lost humanity, even as he struggles against it. And so, of course, if we have the monsters, we also have to have the humans. And so we do meet a team of especially young humans who are trying to survive out in the world. And as you'd expect, they're bunkered in, they've got a bunch of weapons, they're watching out for the zombies, they feel like they have to kill the zombies if anything happens. And so we see these two forces, the monsters and the zombies, clash when the zombies go looking for food because they're hungry and the humans go looking for supplies because they can't just have everything that they need when they're all bunkered down. And so our main human character is there in the middle. Her name is Julie, and she goes out with her friends to go looking for supplies for their kind of human colony that's bunkered down. R is the main zombie, and he goes out looking for food, and they meet each other. I don't have a clip of that because admittedly it's really gross. But they meet up with each other. The humans kill a bunch of zombies, shooting them up with their guns. The zombies get some humans and start to eat them, including R, attacking after he gets shot by Julie's boyfriend, the main guy in the foreground of the picture you're looking at now. And so he gets Julie's boyfriend, and he eats Julie's boyfriend's brain as a zombie is wont to do. But when he does that, he gets to have memories of the person whose brain he is eating, and that feeds his desire for connection. And in this case, in particular, he realizes in that moment that he doesn't want to continue to be so driven by his zombie impulses and wants to have that connection not only with other zombies, but also with humans. And so he decides to protect Julie rather than eating her, even when he and the other zombies have her cornered. And so he takes her to an airport where all the zombies kind of hang out before they go out looking for food, and decides that he has to protect her. So he covers her all up with mud and takes her to hang out and be safe from being eaten there, in particular in a plane that he lives in. And as you would expect, in still a somewhat traditional movie, even though we'll see that there's a lot of things that end up being different from this movie, R and Julie, and you can see maybe some connections to Romeo and Juliet here, but we'll see how much it takes a left turn throughout the rest of the movie, begin to connect. that they find things to bond over. R likes to collect things that Julie also appreciates, and something about that connection starts to change both of them. R, in particular, has more and more emotions. He starts to be able to not just grunt, but to be able to actually say words, and then phrases, and then sentences in an effort to connect with Julie. And Julie begins to see that maybe there is some humanity left in the zombies, and questions a little bit a strong defensiveness and aggressiveness and desire to wipe out all the zombies that she sees in most of the other humans that she lives with and interacts with. And what's really fascinating then is not that this becomes a tale of star-crossed lovers, but that the real drive within Warm Bodies is to see that their spark doesn't just develop something for R and for Julie and then something between them. It really goes outward most of all. And so the zombies that at first R was protecting Julie from get a chance to see this connection, and it somehow magically sparks something in them the same way that it sparked something in R. And so they don't have that same hunger for humans anymore, and instead they are focused most on that desire for connection. And so they don't even know why, but they begin to have memories. They begin to be able to talk, and they begin to be able to really desire that same connection and want to work with R and Julie to do something about it. And so, more than any love story, we see that R and Julie go out to try to see if they can help the humans and create a new type of society where zombies and humans might actually be able to connect. And so here's a shot we see of those zombies in particular going out and saying, "We're going to go help." You can see this steely resolve, this passion in them that otherwise they would have been dead and bored and not able to connect. And that continues to build and build and build for them throughout the rest of the movie. And what is a threat to zombies and humans both is what they call skeletons or bonies. And so these are zombies that have gotten to the point where they've completely lost anything recognizable of humanity. And the movie actually mentions that they wish that there was something that could spark things in the bonies as well, but it doesn't end up working. And so that still becomes a threat that hangs over the humans, even if they're willing to accept the zombies are helping, hangs over the zombies, even if they were to decide to ignore the humans and not try to make anything right. And that also, though, then becomes something that they can show each other and prove to each other how they're going to support each other. And so they go forward, and there's a chance then for the zombies and the humans to fight against the bonies. And so we see this first chance when at first the humans in particular are really suspicious of the zombies. The zombies know that they might be attacked by the humans. But when the zombies start to intervene and help the humans against the bonies, we see these more and more connections beginning to happen between the zombies and the humans. And a whole new possible world seems to be out there hanging out over them. Now, eventually, R and Julie also have that same threat of the bonies coming after them. And so their connection is bonded completely when they face off that threat. And they end up in a place where they have nowhere else to go, but R is willing to sacrifice himself, jumping out of a high window into some water in order to protect Julie. He feels like he's not alive. Zombies can take a lot more damage. And so if he falls and she falls on him, then he can take all of the impact and everything will be okay. And in fact, he does put himself at risk of significant injury, banging his head on the bottom of this water. But it's not completely resolved yet, because there are still humans who are especially suspicious of zombies. In particular is actually Julie's father and some other people who have sort of made themselves the army of protecting humans and attacking zombies. And they don't believe that zombies could actually have something that's enough of a change for them to trust, that they would always be at risk. And this is hanging over the threat that is there not only for the humans, but is there for the zombies. But what ultimately makes the difference is not only how the zombies fight for the humans, but also that then as the zombies change, they begin to have things of their life fully come back. They're not just sort of nice, lifeless bodies instead of hungry, lifeless bodies, but their heartbeats come back. Their blood flow comes back, along with their speech, along with their ability to connect. And so that vulnerability that happens from seeing that R is bleeding and the reports of how the zombies are protecting the humans, even at cost to themselves, creates the ability for humans and zombies to feel like they can have a life going forward together and eventually even see full healing for the zombies and full transformation in the attitudes of the humans. And so we see these beautiful examples at the end of the film of humans and zombies helping each other and connecting. Here's one being cared for by a doctor. And then one of my favorites at the end was a zombie who was trying to play catch. I don't know how well you can see it, with another human to relearn human connection. And he's getting smacked in the face with the baseball because he's still learning how to hold up his glove and everything like that. So it's this amazing, powerful story of transformation, of the belief that it's not just get away from the horrible, dangerous zombie that's going to eat you, and that victory is either killing a zombie or getting away from a zombie, but that victory is transformation of everyone and the possibility of healing for those who are infected. And that's a really amazing story that is, as you would guess, really different from what we normally see in zombie movies. And that reminded me of hopefully what you saw in the story of Jesus encountering the leper in Luke 5 in our gospel reading for today. See, lepers in Jesus' time were considered to be basically too far gone in their disease. They had to live out of the cities and colonies. They weren't allowed to participate in worship. They were considered unclean and therefore not able to access worship or the temple or connection with God in the same way. And even if you were walking in an area that might have a leper colony, lepers had to call out, "I'm a leper, stay away from me, you don't want to get infected by me." And so in the story, we see something from Jesus in particular that's really powerful and amazing. And that's where Jesus doesn't just say to the leper, I have the power of God, stay over there and don't corrupt God with your uncleanness getting close to me, but I'll heal you and then everything will be fine. Jesus responds to the call from the leper and actually reaches out and touches the leper, being willing to put himself at risk, being willing to show love and connection that that leper probably had not had in years before. And so not only was the disease ravaging that man, but also all of the other consequences of being isolated, of being thought poorly of not being able to have interaction with probably his family, other people that he'd grown up with. And maybe that's something a lot of us can relate to now too. And that is an amazing flip of some of those same assumptions we have about what infection can mean, what disease can mean, what corruption can mean, what bad influence can mean as Christians, where typically we are prone to thinking, well, we don't want to get mixed up in that, so the best thing we do is keep it at arm's length or farther as much as we can if we encounter it, to get rid of it and not let it have any potential of impacting us at all. And to some degree, that was part of what the temple system at the time was too, that lepers would have to live out in colonies. And yet Jesus says that the power of God works in the exact opposite way. The power of God is not at risk of being corrupted by the thing in the world, but the power of God can reach out and touch and be infectious back in the positive healing way against those things that might otherwise separate us. John wrote in 1 John 4:4 a message that gives us that same idea. Greater is the one within you than the one who is in the world. And we see this not only in the Gospels and the way that Jesus operates, but we do also see this in our Old Testament scripture and throughout the Bible with all types of writers, of the goal and vision that God has for us, even when we interact with those things that might feel like bad influences, like potentially corrupting, or that might even be enemies to us. In Isaiah has this vision that God gives him of what God really wants, even for those people who were enemies of Israel. Some of the classic enemies of Israel, Egypt, Assyria, the ones who have put Israel in slavery, who have conquered Israel, who have destroyed it, who have carried it off. God gives Isaiah this picture of, ultimately my goal is to be in contact even with those people who have seemed the most far off, to bring them close to me and to have them be combined in worship and in support with Israel, that Assyria, Egypt, and Israel would all be blessed by God and would be brought together ultimately. And we can see that not only just for that historical moment, but that is God's heart for all time and for all people. Now, I do think that it's important that we remember that these are not supposed to be just easy, one-time solve things where we ignore the fact that there's any cost. I didn't talk about it much in the movie, but the zombies do, in fact, have to wrestle with, for themselves and then also for building relationships with the humans, that they have been attacking the humans, that they have been eating humans to sustain themselves. We know that oftentimes it's not just that there's a small disagreement or there's something that's maybe a little controversial but not that bad, and then that's how we can still interact with it, and the reconciliation, the new possibilities of transformation is simple and easy and not really that big a deal. We do oftentimes have to really acknowledge that there is deep pain, that there is deep corruption, that there is people doing things that are oppressive, that are harmful, that are hurtful, and that have made strong rifts, not insignificant ones, in connections between people. And so this picture of how God reaches out is not to say that God glosses over that or ignores it, but that God is still powerful enough even to bring transformation to there. First, by bringing accountability so that people are willing to say, yes, this is something that is wrong, where that has been my responsibility, but God gives grace so they don't feel shame and defensiveness about that, but are willing to admit that, have it worked on, and then be able to have some type of reconciliation, maybe in a new type of way with different healthy boundaries, but that God can fix any of those possibilities. But they don't get fixed if we pretend that this harm and the impact is not significant. I'll say also that it's worth us remembering that oftentimes we say that when there's rift, when there's conflict, we just got to make a compromise. That we think that sometimes coming back to the middle on things is the way that stuff gets solved. But like with zombies, we have to acknowledge that if we're in a position of causing significant harm, we have to take more of a position of profound accountability before we find profound reconciliation. And we have to give space for people to have profound healing before maybe they're able to be ready to have that reconciliation. And that we shouldn't just say it's a simple meeting in the middle and everyone's on the same page. That's not always true with what real transformation looks like. And I think the way God reaches out always acknowledges that. It's about serving people. It's about seeing people for what their circumstances really are. I think in particular about the healing that Jesus did for the leper. Jesus had to fully heal the leper so that the leper would be recognized and be able to enter into community and worship. But Jesus also told the leper not to make a big deal out of the healing necessarily, not to make it about Jesus, which is kind of an interesting approach. And I wonder, looking forward, was Jesus sort of creating the opportunity for healing and transformation of the way people looked at each other when the leper went and talked to all those folks who had rejected him before? That they could see that new possibility was there and that maybe that was something that they needed to be open to themselves, even beyond the healing that Jesus was doing. And they had their own way of needing to be healed because of what Jesus sparked first there with the leper. And when we come across stories like this, whether it's in the Bible with the story of Jesus healing, or whether it's where stories off the beaten path, like in Warm Bodies, I think that we can find God's Spirit speaking to us unexpectedly. We have the ability to put ourselves in any of those positions. I encourage you, as you reflect on this, how can you say, you know, in this relationship, in this circumstance, I'm being a little bit of a zombie. I need God's healing and accountability to make things right. In other cases, we might say, you know, in this case, I'm kind of like the human. I am not leaving myself open up to the possibility that people could be healed, that there could be reconciliation. I'm rejecting things too quickly out of hand. I need God's healing to help me be open to people being able to be connected to me, even where there's been harm. But that first also I need God to heal me to be ready to accept that and not do something before I'm ready and where it can actually be unhealthy and unhelpful instead. And in the movie, ultimately, we see that to some degree there is openness and risk and vulnerability and forgiveness and trying something new and putting yourself out there in a positive way for both the humans and the zombies. And I think, again, that that shows us that we all are going to have sides of both of these that we need to look at and ask God to come into our lives and deal with. This brings to mind for me some common things that maybe you've heard before about how we respond to conflict. And what response should we have, right? If we see this infection, if we see this risk, if we see this threat, what are we supposed to do? You've probably heard a lot of these before too, right? We have fight or flight. If something happens that feels like conflict, that feels like a threat, whether it's something simple like, should I address this media or not, that seems like it might have some controversial elements, and how should I follow God in watching that or not? Or if it's in a relationship and there's some conflict between two people, right? Do we duke it out? Do we try to show how strong we are? Or do we run away and avoid the problem? Those are the most common, but people have also held up new ones over the years. There's things like not only fight or flight, but also fawn or freeze. Do we flatter the person and try to make it so that we don't really have a real relationship, but we just make them like us in sort of this surface level weird thing? Or do we not even run away, but we just get stuck and we don't know what to do and we have no interaction whatsoever and just hope that people avoid us and we don't do anything one way or the other? And then lastly, there's also more common ones that have been lifted up called flood or fatigue, where our emotions just overtake us when we have these interactions, we have these conflicts, we have these threats. And so we either feel things really profoundly in a way that keeps us from being able to connect with other people and understand their relationships or their emotions because we're so wrapped up in ours. Or it again makes us have this different type of withdrawal. We're not really freezing, we're not really fleeing, but we're still withdrawing because we're so fixed on our emotions in a way that disconnects us from other people. And those are all the ways that we can react to threat, to potential infection, to potential corruption, to conflict. And we can probably hear that there are some coping mechanisms within each of those, but that also that those would probably not ultimately be a goal of health for ourselves and those that we would interact with. And so what could we potentially do instead? And staying on that same F theme and looking at what Jesus did and looking at the movie, I thought we can face what it is that we're dealing with. Not sort of duke them out, not turn away, whether we're freezing or fleeing or whatever it might be, but face and make that connection, even if there's some difficulty or risk there. And then work proactively to fix wherever there might be a rift or problem between us. And we know that if we take that approach, that we're going to need two more F's underneath it that we should keep in mind as well. And that's that we have to have faith that God would be with us to motivate that process, to animate that process, to give power and possibility to that type of process to face and fix. We can't probably do that on our own. We need God to be in the middle of it. And then also that forgiveness will be a part of it. It might be forgiveness for ourselves where we've caused a problem and asking for that from another person. And it might be forgiveness to another person and doing that in a real substantive way, not in a dismissive or surface level way. And that often takes a longer time and more effort, but it is important. And ultimately, when we take that approach, just like we saw in Warm Bodies and in that story of that zombie transformation, in Warm Bodies, they call the new world and what happened the exhumation, exhuming the thing that was dead and bringing it together with what was alive. We can hear probably in that word a lot of something that's really precious to us as Christians as well, resurrection. And we know that because we have the promise of resurrection in Jesus first, and that is then offered onto us, that we have that foundation to stand on, that we can have faith in, to be able to forgive, to be able to face, and to be able to fix. Again, because coronavirus is so on our minds right now, I want to revisit that infectious analogy, that infectious picture for how we think about how we look to find our faith off the beaten path, how we deal with conflict and difficulty. Right? When we are thinking about something that's infectious, the ideas of quarantining, of staying far away and bunkering down, of eradicating something to completely get rid of it and defeat it, no matter what impact it has on that thing that's causing harm, that makes a lot of sense. An infection, though, is not a human. And the idea that we would put the same strategies that we have for dealing with infection onto other people, hopefully we can see that analogy doesn't fully track and that we should have a different way. However, it's interesting that even within that infectious mindset, that there's something I think that we can get guidance for and inspiration again as an analogy from God for how we can actually approach people as opposed to diseases. Right? One of the things we're looking forward to most with coronavirus right now is a vaccine. And many of you may know that a vaccine, right, the first vaccines were often dead cells of the disease that were given to a person so that their immune system could learn to fight the disease when it was alive with that dead disease that wasn't as threatening. In fact, you could almost see it instead as the dead disease, like the zombies and warm bodies, was working together with the live T cells and white blood cells and immune system of the human body to make it a stronger, fully functioning immune system and thriving life. Right? So it's ironic that that picture of a vaccine might actually give us a model of, like warm bodies, how we can still come together. It's a workable amount of the disease. We are still able to encounter something that seems threatening, and it trains our immune system to be fully healthy. It prevents also an overreaction of our immune system to things, that sometimes our immune system can overreact to things, and that actually causes us suffering with fevers and with other symptoms that are not necessarily the disease, but our immune system. Our immune system needs to know how to keep itself proportionally in control. And so both the disease gets transformed, the immune system gets transformed into something new and ultimately healthier. And so hopefully we could take that picture of an infectious analogy and metaphor over the one that says we have to stay completely away from those things that are painful or difficult or potentially risky, or that we have to completely eradicate people who we have conflict with or problems with. Because even those people that most get under our skin are very different from a disease. And just like Jesus showed us, we have that chance to reach out, to make connection, and to have a whole new possibility of life because of God's Spirit within us, helping us make those connections and having those new possibilities. And I hope that you'll look for ways to find that. So that's our sermon for today. Again, I hope you'll get a chance to have been watching this over the weekend, and please do, right underneath this on Facebook, type in questions that you have about, Rob, I don't know if I quite agree or understand with this point that you were trying to make. You should talk about that more. Or what about this circumstance that seems to contradict or need a different perspective than what you emphasized in this sermon? Those will be great things for us to talk about. I'd also really love to hear, what are times where maybe you have had an experience of finding faith off the beaten path, of having a connection or relationship with someone who seemed only about risk or conflict or difficulty, but that you found that you were able to, like Jesus, have a point of healing and connection and health and blessing instead? And lastly, also, please do share, if you have favorite movies that you've gotten wonderful lessons from, I want to hear about those too, and I think other people will too. So type those up in the Facebook comments, send me an email about it or not, and I'll be lifting up all of those things, or as many of them as possible if we get flooded, during our sermon time briefly on Sunday morning. Grace and peace to you and all that you'll be doing this weekend. I look forward to interacting with all of those great questions, all of those great stories, all of those great shares of your own favorite movies in the coming days. God bless.